Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from John Russell, Dorothy Gundy, and Anne Ball. Brian Lynn will tell us what's trending today, and later, Phil Dierking and Jill Robbins will have this week's Education Report. But first, President Donald Trump says that the United States must continue fighting in Afghanistan in a conflict that he once called a complete waste. In a televised speech to the nation, Trump said his original instinct was to pull out. But he said he changed his mind after a series of meetings with his cabinet members and top military advisors. Trump said a hasty withdrawal would create a vacuum that terrorists, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, would instantly fill. He added the U.S. must prevent Afghanistan and the region from giving shelter to Islamist militants. We can no longer be silent about Pakistan's safe havens for terrorist organizations, the Taliban, and other groups that pose a threat to the region and beyond, he said. Trump said, going forward, U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan will be based on conditions on the ground. He said no time period would be set for withdrawal. And he said the U.S. would not announce future military plans, including troop numbers. America's enemies must never know our plans or believe they can wait us out. I will not say when we are going to attack, but attack we will. For years, Trump has criticized the U.S. effort in Afghanistan and called for a speedy withdrawal of U.S. troops. As president, Trump has questioned whether sending more troops is wise. "We're not winning," he told advisors in a July meeting. But Defense Secretary Jim Mattis has argued that a U.S. military presence is needed to protect against a continuing threat from Islamist militants. On Sunday, Mattis said the president's plan involved more than just Afghanistan, saying it amounted to a full South Asia strategy. And earlier Monday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke on the phone with leaders of Pakistan, India, and Afghanistan to discuss the new U.S. regional strategy. U.S. generals have advised Trump to send as many as 4,000 troops to retake territory from the Taliban. The group now controls nearly half of Afghanistan. But Trump, who campaigned on an America First foreign policy, has been resistant to commit more troops to the country. James Dobbins was a U.S. special diplomat to Afghanistan and Pakistan under former President Barack Obama. Before Trump spoke Monday night, Dobbins said the president has only a choice between losing and not losing. "Winning is not an option," Dobbins told VOA's Afghan service. More U.S. troops could help train more members of the Afghan Special Forces, says Michael Kugelman, a South Asian expert at the Wilson Center. The new strategy, Kugelman added, has to consider Pakistan's role in the region. Pakistan, he said, happens to play a key role in the war in Afghanistan because, among other things, leaders of the Taliban insurgency have used Pakistan as a sanctuary. Currently, there are about 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Most are advising Afghan forces, but some are involved in operations against the Taliban and the Islamic State's Afghan affiliate.
President José Eduardo dos Santos is the only leader that the majority of the 22 million people who live in Angola have ever known. He will soon leave office after 38 years in power. Many Angolans are preparing to vote for the first time. Almost all of those who have marked ballots in the past have never seen one without Santos' name on it. Ana Maria Espiritu Santos Montero is 60 years old. She has never voted because she did not believe there was a reason to do so. That is because Dos Santos has often been accused of rigging elections. Montero told VOA that she is going to vote for the first time Wednesday because she does not believe rigging will be widespread in the next election. She says she hopes it will be transparent and fair. Montero supports the CASA CE opposition party. It was formed in 2012 and controls 8 seats in parliament. CASA CE faces strong competition from the MPLA, which has ruled the country since 1975. The party has nominated Foreign Minister João Lourenço to be Dos Santos' successor, but many younger voters are unhappy with the MPLA. They blame the party for the country's economic inequality. Luis Gabriel is a 27-year-old student. He said he cannot find a job. I think this year will be different because Dos Santos is not running, he said. But not all first-time voters want change. Gaspar Domingos said he is staying with the MPLA. I am very expectant because I believe that the MPLA is the big family, is the first community, he said. Critics of Dos Santos do not think there will be much change. They say the ruling party has intimidated voters. Rafael Marquez is a reporter and critic of Dos Santos. He believes Angolans already know what the results of the election will be. The question is whether the MPLA will try to understand how disaffected, how unhappy the population is, and give more space to the opposition, he said. Opposition leaders are hopeful, but polls predict an MPLA win. I'm John Russell.
When Omar Romero hit a walk-off triple to beat the Dominican Republic, his teammates mobbed him to celebrate the win like any team would. The young baseball players from Venezuela are playing in the Little League World Series in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania this year. Even though their country is suffering from a severe economic recession, they were able to come to the United States with the help of some Major League Baseball players from Venezuela. Rougned Odor plays for the Texas Rangers. He learned to play baseball in Maracaibo, Venezuela. The Venezuelan team that is playing in the World Series is from the town. "I know everybody on that team, in that league," Odor told the Associated Press news agency in Texas recently. "And that's why I tried to help those kids." The players had to fly to Caracas to get their visas, permission to go to the United States. Odor paid for their plane tickets. The visas cost about $170. San Diego Padres player Julius Chacon paid for their visas. Chacon also came from Maracaibo and played on a little league team in Venezuela in 2000. "I know how big a deal it is for the young guys, so they deserve to go," Chacon said Sunday in San Diego. "I'm glad I could help them come here to play in the Little League World Series. That was one of my dreams when I was young." Only three parents of players on the Venezuelan Little League team were able to travel to Pennsylvania. A man from Venezuela who now lives near Williamsport let them stay at his house. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Japanese officials are considering what to do with the large amount of poisoned water being stored at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The plant went into meltdown after a 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Huge water storage tanks around the center currently hold an estimated 750,000 tons of water poisoned with a radioactive substance called tritium. People objected last month when news reports said the owner of the center, TEPCO, planned to release the water into the Pacific Ocean. Environmental groups and local fishermen do not want the water released. Takahiro Kimoto is general manager of TEPCO's nuclear division. He says the company has not yet made a decision. He told VOA that the ocean release was just one possible way to deal with the water. He said vaporizing would be another. TEPCO says all nuclear power centers around the world release tritium into the environment. Tritium is considered one of the less dangerous radioactive substances, says Ken Boosler. He is a marine radiochemist with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts. He is studying the effects of the Fukushima disaster on the Pacific Ocean. A system called ALPS is designed to purify or remove other more harmful material from the contaminated water. Boosler says more supervision is needed. Japanese officials also have to remove the nuclear fuel from the damaged power center. Robots have recorded pictures of what looks like melted fuel rods inside reactor 3. But in other reactors, the very high levels of radioactivity damaged observation robots within minutes. TEPCO's Kimoto says the company plans to announce a major policy plan in the fall. He says it will also announce at that time what method it will use to remove the fuel. The Japanese government estimates that cleaning the area affected by the meltdown will cost at least $190 billion. Experts predict the process will take at least 40 years. I'm Ann Ball.
United States Food and Drug Administration wants to make it easier for people to stop smoking. It proposes to do this by lowering nicotine levels in cigarettes. The FDA said lower nicotine levels will make it easier for people to smoke less and to move toward stopping smoking altogether. Scott Gottlieb, the head of the FDA, is a doctor and cancer survivor. Gottlieb said that most deaths and diseases from smoking are a result of an addiction to nicotine, a chemical found in tobacco plants. A smoking addiction means that people feel such a physical need to smoke that they have a very difficult time stopping. He said that nicotine is to blame for this dependency. Gottlieb also called cigarettes the only legal product that, when used as intended, will kill half of all long-term users. The FDA is taking public comments before deciding whether to put the proposed policy into effect. The Altria Group sells Marlboro and other brands of cigarettes in the United States. It said any change in nicotine levels must be done based on science. The company also said the FDA should watch out for unintended consequences. In other words, a result that was not thought of at the time an action was first proposed. Jennifer Tidy is a professor of psychiatry at Brown University in Rhode Island. She and others did research on lowering nicotine levels. Their findings were published 2 years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine. In their study, over 800 smokers were given cigarettes with different levels of nicotine over a six-week period. Tidy said the results showed that lower nicotine cigarettes helped people smoke less and even stop smoking. The World Health Organization says cigarette smoking is one of the biggest public health threats the world has ever faced. WHO said more than 7 million people are killed from smoking each year worldwide. Yet, it said many people do not know about the dangers of smoking. More than 6 million of those deaths are the result of direct tobacco use, while around 890,000 are the result of non-smokers being exposed to secondhand smoke, WHO said. 13 members of the U.S. Senate wrote a letter to the FDA. The senators, all members of the Democratic Party, expressed support for the proposed nicotine regulation. They asked that the rule be put into effect quickly. The letter was put together by Senator Patty Murray from the western state of Washington. The Reuters news agency reported that officials expect regulators in Europe to study similar calls to reduce nicotine levels.
This is what's trending today. Norman Rockwell is considered one of America's most famous artists of the 20th century. He was known for painting traditional and small-town American scenes. His subjects included sports, war, and images of American culture, such as a Thanksgiving dinner or a family praying together. Today, people who own original Norman Rockwell paintings can sell them for a lot of money. A family in Texas had enjoyed their Rockwell image for many years. They thought the picture hanging above their fireplace was a copy, not an original painting. But recently, a member of the family discovered the truth. The piece was, in fact, a signed Norman Rockwell masterpiece. It shows a group of baseball umpires looking up at the sky while deciding whether to cancel a game due to rain. Rockwell painted it as a study, a smaller work created in preparation for his famous piece, Tough Call, in 1948. Rockwell gave the study to one of the umpires featured in the piece. The image remained in the family. His completed Tough Call sits in America's Baseball Hall of Fame. Once family members received confirmation the piece was a real, signed original, they decided to list it with an auction company. Chris Ivey is director of sports memorabilia at Heritage Auctions, which took in the painting. He said it was remarkable to find such an important Norman Rockwell original after so many years. It was also remarkable how much money the painting brought during the recent auction in Dallas, Texas. The company had predicted the masterpiece would bring in about $300,000. So nearly everyone was surprised when the painting sold for $1.6 million to an unnamed collector. And that's what's trending today. I'm Brian Lynn.
Creating a classroom environment that treats women and men equally is important for the educational success of students. However, gender equality does not stop with the teacher. It is also important that the materials used are supporting equal treatment. In fact, many classroom materials, especially those that are older, may contain gender bias in activities, photos, or words. These materials can include textbooks, images, reading materials, written assignments, or even test materials. Having students use materials like these in class can reinforce stereotypes about gender roles in society. Classroom materials that reinforce gender stereotypes can discourage students, weaken their motivation, and limit their overall academic performance. This can result in fewer opportunities available to students when they finish their schooling.
Research has found that stereotypes and gender bias in English language materials do exist. Several studies by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, have found that some texts underrepresent women, contain stereotypes about women, or offensive comments about women. In addition, research has found that characterizations in teaching materials often show a male majority. One study on high school English language textbooks in Iran found that male characterizations were used as much as 80% of the time. The first step is to understand how to identify gender bias in textbooks. In the online version of this story, we have an image taken from an English language textbook. What do you notice about how the men and women are being portrayed? In this image, there are 6 people, 4 men and 2 women, shown in different jobs. The men pictured include a construction worker, a doctor, a police officer, and a truck driver. The women shown include a farm worker and a food store employee. This image shows men and women in gender stereotype jobs in 2 ways. First, male representation is double that of female. Second, the men generally are working in higher level, more economically powerful jobs.
It is important that teachers are skilled in identifying the signs of unequal gender representation in textbooks and other materials. A UNESCO checklist can help teachers check their materials for this problem. Here are some of its guidelines. Are the materials used by the teacher or students free from gender stereotypes? Do the materials show females and males an equal amount of times? Do the materials show females and males with equal respect and potential when talking about jobs or the future, for example? Does the curriculum reflect the needs and life experiences of both males and females? Does the curriculum promote peace and equality for males and females, regardless of their race, class, disability, religion, sexual preference, or ethnic background?
So, what can teachers do when they find gender inequalities in teaching materials? The answer is, it depends. Some teachers are able to make changes to their materials or the way in which they use them. Other teachers may be able to create original teaching content. Here are some more UNESCO guidelines that might help such efforts. Make sure that males and females are shown equally in class materials. Make sure that the themes, subjects, and pictures used in class materials connect to the life experiences of both female and male students. Make sure that female and male students are not presented only in stereotypical ways. Make sure you use a balanced amount of materials written by male and female authors. Include women and men as examples of experts or leaders.
It requires additional work for teachers to review their materials for gender bias, but using gender-sensitive materials in class can help support the creation of more gender-sensitive attitudes among students. It can also establish a stronger learning environment where all students are motivated to succeed. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.